Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here's your host for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence.
Greetings and welcome on board WKOK's live telephone talk show, On the Mark. I am Mark Lawrence. Mr. Joe's always off on Friday, but I am so glad to say that we have some special guests in the studio. We're going to have more on the way. Our whole topic today is resiliency. We're going to be talking about the Wood Mode Company and how, not so much about the company, but how employees are bouncing back. We're going to talk about some people who are helping in this, and we're going to have a number of individuals call in. We'll hear from Joanne Trauman of the Greater Susquehanna Valley United Way. Jim Richmond's going to be calling in from 1847 Financial. We're going to be hearing from one of the individuals at CEDACOG that helps communities recover and avoid damage from flooding. And you say, well, what's that have to do with Wood Mode? Well, resiliency within a community. Bob Garrett is here, President and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce, and Sue Green is back, chair of the chamber, one of the directors in the Penn State Executive Programs. Bob, thank you for coming
in. Great to be here this morning.
And Sue, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
I do appreciate it. Let's start out with this. We're going to get to the jobless numbers in a second, but you had determined some time ago that the idea of a resiliency update for the next 90 minutes would be timely.
I wanted to jump into the notion of resiliency, Mark. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about recovery. We spend a lot of time talking about building an economy. Now what we want to talk about is maintaining that economy. You know, it's one thing to build. It's another thing to maintain. You know, history is littered with great civilizations that built their great civilizations, I should say, but they didn't do a great job of maintaining them, and they've become museums, the Pantheon, the great Roman Empire. You know, where is that these days? Now, what I want to talk about is how do we stay strong when something like a catastrophic plant closing like we've experienced in the last month comes along. And that is the theme. What underlines today's theme of resiliency.
And Sue, that may be something that you deal with in your work, this idea of making sure that companies can boom. We've seen that, but staying power is important for these companies that you work with.
It's true, and I think what we try to do is we probably focus more on the front side of just making people prepared and keeping them prepared. So it'll be interesting how the rest of this show goes today.
Okay, so 3.6% the jobless rate nationally, same as last month.
Yeah, holding steady. That's the national job rate. And if you were listening very, very carefully, you heard that those rates were adjusted for April and March going backwards. That's because our local job rates actually get reported a month after our national job rates. Well, you'll say, how did they do that? Well, they have a crystal ball and they make some assumptions. What's really interesting is when we do our homework getting ready for this show each month, I look at a bunch of different economists from all over the map, really, in all political persuasions, sizes of media, different financial advisors, etc. We had a very, very bearish report coming out of ADP, the large payroll processing company, that would only be 27,000 jobs. And then our best report, interestingly enough, came from left-leaning Bloomberg News, who said there'd be 185,000 jobs created. Isn't it interesting that it comes out at 75? It almost exactly splits the difference of the two.
Somewhere in the middle. Well, that's where the truth lies in Washington and Harrisburg, as we, you know, the art of a compromise is alive and well. Okay, so where do we see any any elements of the economy that are slowing? We know Wall Street, if you bring an investor in here, he'll tell you, oh my gosh, I'm having a terrible day. But where do we see any slowing? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there's certainly some significant headwinds in the goods production. I meant to say in the goods production field. We would think along the lines of manufacturing and construction. There's some significant headwinds that those companies are feeling right now, not least of which are the two big issues, tariffs, which we already heard about in the news portion, and also in this labor shortage. The labor shortage is very real. In fact, Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, summed up this report as saying, job growth is moderating. Labor shortages are impeding job growth, particularly at small companies, and the layoffs at bricks and mortar retailers is really beginning to hurt. So the economy is shifting, it is changing. So we have some weaknesses, and the problem is when your manufacturing and construction sector are getting weak, you need to start looking at all the other sectors, because basically everybody else supports those sectors in the way the North American economy is set up.
All right, Sue, I asked Bob what factors in the economy are starting to slow down. That's the pessimist in me. The optimist is going to be next, so stay at the microphone. But what are the aspects of the economy that are starting to show that slowing?
Well, from our perspective, you know, folks are investing in their folks, in their people, training, in the supply chain area, supervisory leadership. So we're not necessarily seeing this at this point for us. I mean, as far as the training aspects go, and I think some of that is just to be prepared. Companies thinking that we need to be able to be nimble and keep themselves in front of things instead of the slowing
pace. Well, sure, you got to make sure that your people are trained up. Plus, there's a certain contentment that comes with a company that invests in you. Mm-hmm. You know, for the worker, they find out that the individual knows that I'm going to stick around. They're going to make sure I'm trained up for the next topic. They want me to be the next manager, you know, to make sure that I have, you know, like, I don't know a darn thing about how to make spreadsheets sing, but I know good CEOs, Bob does, you know, good people do that know how to do that. So that might be the kind of training. At Penn State, what kind of training do you offer up in the executive programs?
We spend a lot of our energy on supply chain, both leadership, analytics, transportation, all of that whole portfolio of what from front to back in the supply chain space. Leadership and strategy, executive leadership, you know, higher tier leadership, just because you need the strategy piece of it.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on that. Well, yep. Thank you for that. U.S. labor participation rate 62.8, same as last month. What's going on? We do not have people jumping into the workforce at this time.
Holding steady is going to be the sub-theme today. Clearly, the unemployment rate held steady. The participation rate is holding steady. We're not happy at all with the 62.8, particularly when we drill in here in the greater Susquehanna Valley. We actually have a county in this in locally here where that participation rate is 55%. That means 45% of the people who could be in the labor force for whatever reason, and the reasons are very complex, but for whatever reason, they're sitting on the sidelines. So that's what we've built our strategic plan around. The whole notion of our workforce imperative is we want to make sure that the folks have those skills for the jobs that exist in the greater Susquehanna Valley. That's really come in handy this past month. You know, it was the afternoon of May 13th when we got the devastating news that Woodmode was closing, that the local forces were able to come together and really rally around workforce development issues. We have the tools now in place. They just need to be deployed. And I think you're seeing that with the news that's come out with the different job fairs, with all the different training that's already being offered or being geared up for those laid-off Woodmode employees. It's not just for the Woodmode employees. It's very devastating what happened to those folks. Nearly 1,000 people laid off. But keep in mind that that's 1,000. We still have, in this valley, we probably have another 10,000 who, for whatever reason, are on the sidelines that we would really like to give them whatever it takes to get them into the labor force, because the key ingredient, the very foundational ingredient to a strong economy, is people who are willing to do the work.
So U.S. labor participation rate, I don't want to work. I want to retire early. I want to work part-time. I got laid off from a job years ago, and guess what? My family's doing okay. Are these the stories that people say why they don't want to get into the workforce?
That's one of the stories we hear.
That was three stories.
And to those folks, that's three of the stories that we hear.
I don't want to work. And I'm lazy. I'm unemployed. I want to work part-time. I want to retire early.
And now you have five stories.
Right.
But and I can tell you 55 more stories along that in that same vein. We're going for the folks who would really like to be in the labor force, would really like to increase their abilities and their employability, try to make a little more money than what they currently are making. Those are the folks we're focused on. Hey, if you were able to take early retirement and you're out on a pontoon boat out on Lake Augusta, God bless you. But if you want to get a bigger pontoon boat, let's see what we can do to get you the training so that you can make the money to buy that better boat.
All right. We are going to keep talking about this topic. We have a guest lined up, and he's on the line. We're going to refrain from taking calls and questions for the moment from other individuals, but we have one of our guests lined up. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly. We're going to be talking to one of our good guests very shortly. Jim Richmond is on the line, and he's going to be our first individual to talk about this resiliency topic. You are listening to On the Mark, topic resiliency, subject Woodmode, and special guests throughout our program are going to help fill in the blanks as to what's going to be happening in the years ahead in the Central Susquehanna Valley, and to the individuals who worked at Woodmode. What is next is our theme. We'll be right back.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the news line with us now, Jim Richmond is here. He's a partner at 1847 Financial. Official introduction is Jim is a partner at 1847 Financial in Hummel's Wharf, which is a broad, 1847 is a broad series of financial help locations in the U.S. Jim's been in the financial service industry for 2.5 decades. His areas of practice include estate planning, retirement and investment planning, protection and risk protection. He's a registered representative of and securities and advisory services offered through Horner Townsend and Kent LLC. He's a registered investment advisor. He's a member of FINRA and SIPC, and he does not own a crystal ball. He does not know what the future holds for your stock portfolio, so don't call and ask that particular question. Jim, thank you so much for calling in. Are you there, Jim? Oh, I got to push the line. We have a
dumb. Are we good now this morning?
Yes, we're good. Thank you. I'm sorry about that. I did everything
That's
except.
That's all right.
There's only one thing I have to do of the 90 things that have to happen on the show. And guess what I forgot to do? Push the button.
You forgot to push the button.
Yeah. And Rob's on the other side of the room pointing at the keyboard. Push the button. Okay. Jim, financial planning. What are we talking about? When we talk to you about financial planning, you tell us what our conversation's about at that time when we talk about financial planning.
Well, to tell you the truth, Mark, it's fairly simple. It's a financial planning is a process. It's logical. It's a six-step procedure. First, you need to determine your client's current financial situation. You need to develop financial goals with that client, identify alternative courses to take of action. Then you need to evaluate those alternatives, and along with the client, create and implement a financial action plan. And most of all, you need to reevaluate and revise the plan as time goes by, because, like you told, you were saying when you introduced me, I don't have a crystal ball, and neither does any other planner. And it's pretty much a step-by-step process.
Well, hi, Jim. It's Sue Green. How are you?
Good, Sue. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, I have a question for you as we're talking about resiliency. You know, a lot of companies, you know, in the chamber, we're always worried about the other types of things, maybe natural disasters, you know, cyber attacks, you know, keeping, you know, resiliency in mind.
Well, in right. I mean, along with that, business owners.
Sure.
I'm glad you pointed that out. The business owners and the large companies, they need to be prudent in their planning. As you said, cyber attacks. Of course, my industry is always very cognitive of hacking and phishing and of our own, you know, internet capabilities, but also our clients. You know, whether it's an individual or a corporation.
Sure.
And I've seen over the years what gets a lot of businesses in trouble. They don't plan ahead, and if you don't plan for the unthinkable or something that you don't think will happen, it usually happens at some point.
Well, maybe you can share a little bit then some of the steps that businesses and individuals can take to make sure that they can survive a financial, you know, catastrophic event.
I would say it's just like an individual or a family or a business. You need to have what pretty much an emergency fund or resources that you can go to in order to weather those bad times. People and companies, if they don't have the revenue coming in or they're overspending their revenue, that's what gets companies in trouble as far as financially. But for security, they have to have a prudent security system on their, you know, internet and on their business itself, as far as anything that goes out through the World Wide Web. As we all know, that companies have been shut down as far as, you know, when they've been held hostage, so to speak, by cyber crime.
Good morning, Jim. This is Bob Garrett. It's good to hear your voice this morning. Jim, I want to go back to one of the foundational questions, and I know that you've been very actively involved with the former employees at Woodmode, and we really appreciate what you've done there. But I wanted to ask, what is it exactly, and I know you told us about the steps, the six steps, et cetera,
right.
But what is it exactly that financials planners such as you do, and what is the product?
Well, I'll tell you, Bob, as I listed when I started the conversation here this morning, those steps are key, whether it's an individual or a business, but there is no actual, you can't say there's one certain product, because every company or every individual's situation is going to be different. If it's corporation, it may be a way to go in and look at their finances and help them save money on their expenses, or look at ways that they can possibly put money back to weather these storms that we've seen a lot of our, you know, large companies suffer over the years. They need to have reserves of some point, or some type I shouldn't say escape, but something that would help them weather bad times. And it's really, I can't say that there's a particular product out, because everything is different. It could be looking at a company's expenses on their insurances, or say their 401k administration bills, to maybe save them money, or some protection that they don't have enough of. I mean, it's a too broad of a question to say this product is what you would need. I mean, I think it's just such an individualized thing, no matter if it's a client or a company.
It's something of a relief to hear that it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not like going into McDonald's and ordering a hamburger. It's a very different individualized. I wanted to just move along just a little bit. I know you're active in the chamber, and I should take a moment and say thank you very much for your sponsorship of our upcoming member celebration down at Canobles Grove on June 19th. But what I want to get into, Jim, a little bit is our strategic plan. I know you're familiar with our strategic plan and our four imperatives.
Yes.
One of those is the cost of doing business. And we know you're not an insurance agent, but how can your company assist other chamber members and residents of the Valley in controlling their cost, particularly the cost of health care insurance for their employees or for themselves, which has come up as a major issue for our chamber members?
Definitely. In the last few years, I think the healthcare costs have really been a big burden to employers. And the sad thing about it, I think a lot of the employees don't realize how much of a burden that is to the employers. I've seen companies that have raised their deductibles, and some of them will actually, just because they're saving money on the back end, on the premiums, they will actually set a pool of money up for the employees to help them with their co-pays or their co-insurance or the deductibles, because they're saving. If they go with a higher deductible plan, they lower the premium, but yet it's a big burden onto the employees. So some of the companies are saying, okay, we've saved X amount of dollars here, we're going to give you so much money towards your deductible, because in the long run it still saves the company money. And it's really a burden to both the company and the employee. And the biggest thing to do is to shop the companies, to shop around with the different companies and look at different plans to try to find the best thing that they can for the company, but yet their employees as well.
Okay, so shop around.
I wish I had a simple, a simple answer for that, but to shop, all the different carriers, but of course you want to have good coverage. But in today's economic world of this increase in the health insurance costs, they've got to find something that's economical that they can afford and not pass the majority of the cost on to the employee, because the employees can't afford the full amount of these premiums.
All right, we're just about out of time, but you talked about how to potentially save money on health care, shopping around one aspect, plus, of course, examining deductibles and so on. What other financial adjustments can a company do that would help them to be resilient? And then subsequently, that helps their employees with future resiliency, when a company's set up to go into the future.
Well, they need to look at their, they need to manage their costs. And that cost could be from if they're a production company, how much of their product are they having to redo before it goes out, and how much of it's coming back either damaged or not up to the quality that the client is expecting, the customer is expecting, whether it's an individual or a company that they're selling the product to. They can also look at what kind of other insurances that they have that they could still shop. Maybe it's workman's comp and disability, those other things as well, and even looking at their protection on their property. There's ways to save money, but they have to be more, you have to be very proactive in shopping and looking around. But I think the quickest thing that they could probably do is to look on how much they can save on product that's being returned as defective or faulty. Because that costs them money to redo that product, and they can't charge the customer for it.
Okay, so redos. Yeah, we've seen expensive redos at construction companies that are a real setback if that has to happen. Well, Jim, thank you so much. Jim Richmond, partner, 1847 Financial, 1847financial.com. And I give that out not as a free plug, because I know you've helped a lot of people lately from Wood Mode and have made no money from it. So you've been a big help, part of the solution. So we appreciate that. Thank you, Jim.
I appreciate it. Take care, guys.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim Richmond on the line. Reflections on his observations? Just sound business advice is what I heard.
Yeah, you know, but process too, Mark. I really heard Jim talk a lot about resiliency as a process, as preparation and process, having the plan before the fire breaks out, if you will, having the plan before you have to deploy it, if you will. And he didn't say these words, but I also heard him sort of, the underlying was game your plan. If you have a plan, if you get a plan in place, do some tabletop exercises, run it through, just like think back to when we were all in school and we had fire drills. Every now and then you have to have a fire drill. Okay, what are we going to do if this happens? What are we going to do if this happens? What's the contingencies that are out there?
All right, yeah, communication becomes important during those times, too. Sue, what did you hear from Jim?
I heard the same. The other thing I heard is look at the data. You know, look at your day-to-day operations. See where you can save. See where you can be efficient. And, you know, we do a lot of work with Lean with companies and project management for that specific reason. You know, they got to look at, are they getting returns and, you know, different things like that.
So, Lean?
Yeah. Yeah, lean practices, yep.
What's mean? You mean being lean, not fatty, or lean is an acronym?
I don't know if it's an acronym.
Oh, okay.
Lean manufacturing.
Okay.
It's just a process.
It's sort of the next iteration of, you've heard of just in time. So you're not adding extra steps. You do a flow analysis, and you take any of the steps that don't create a profit, any of the steps that don't create a product, you take them out of the process and
as
stay
much
focused.
As you can. All right.
Thanks.
To be continued. You guys are going to stick around. This is a 90-minute special, Resiliency Wood Mode People. We're talking about the people, not the company, but the people who worked there. We got expert panel Sue Green's here from the Penn State Executive Program. She's one of the directors up there, and Bob Garrett in charge of the chamber. This is WDKOK Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here's your host for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence.
Greetings and welcome back to the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. I am Mark Lawrence, host of the show. We have Mr. Bob Garrett, President and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce, with us. We talked about the jobless figures. Joblessness stayed at 3.6% nationwide. U.S. labor participation rate stayed the same, 62.8%. So no change in our economy. Now, we did talk about some of the headwinds. I love that. That's a great phrase. That's facing the economy. And the other aspect of that question is, what's pushing? What are the tailwinds that are keeping the economy going? And I'm going to give Bob an opportunity to answer that question, and Sue, when we come back. Sue Green's here from the Penn State Executive Program. She's one of the directors up there. And they make sure that individuals that are on the fast track get the knowledge and expertise and 100% current on things that are going in the business world, so that those individuals, those men and women, are able to continue to excel and to keep their companies going. Our theme today, resiliency. It is our Financial Friday, and it's an opportunity for us to talk to the Chamber representatives. And we just had Jim Richmond on the line from 1847 Financial. We got another guest standing by. We're going to be talking shortly, and Joanne Troutman's checking in at the bottom of the hour. This theme, resiliency, this idea that setbacks, whether they're significant or incidental, aren't necessarily life-changing, that they are surmountable, that people come out better, that companies prepare for, as Jim Boyd just did a super job outlining how companies can prepare for, I think, Sue, you used the word catastrophe to make sure that companies are ready for that kind of thing. Well, that's, you know, for the wood mode workers, it was a catastrophe, mm-hmm. So that came to pass, you know, that idea of being ready for something along those lines. So, we got more guests lined up on the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Details about them at sunburymotors.com. We are not taking phone calls at this time, but we will as our show progresses, so stand by on our toll-free line. Email us at onthemark@wkok.com, and you can text us at 70236, and we'll try to get to those as the whole show progresses. Headlines. Shikellamy's junior ROTC instructor, much to the sadness of many, Joe Walsh, announces resignation. He tells WKOK he's resigning from the school district for personal reasons after working there for 11 years. Tells us he has no regrets. regrets, no ill feelings toward anyone. Walsh was placed on administrative leave last month after that senior prank that led to some minor damage at the school. Two other individuals were suspended briefly, but they were let back in. Walsh was still on administrative leave and was headed for a potential termination hearing and has resigned. Joe Walsh gone at Shikellamy. Jason Bendel, new superintendent, not commenting to WDKOK on this. He is saying that he can't comment. He's not calling us back. He called us back and said, I can't comment. So how about that? All right. Does that clarify that?
That's a personnel issue.
Right. Thank you. There are a lot of people on the water these days, boaters, kayakers, and people on waterboards, personal watercraft. How about some boating safety information from Harrisburg?
I think it's a safe practice for most people to evaluate the water in which you're navigating. If you're going to be in an area where there's the potential to capsize or get wet at any point, just wearing a life jacket at all times is a good rule of thumb.
Mike Parker from the Fish and Boat Commission and Vice President Mike Pence in PA yesterday. He dropped in on the presidential battleground state of Pennsylvania to tour a robotics manufacturer and urge Congress to pass a new trade pact with Canada and Mexico. He was at JLS Automation in York, PA, and then addressed, I believe, the state GOP had a meeting yesterday, and Mike Pence was there. So good to see the Vice President in Pennsylvania. On the news line with us now, Bill Bradford. He's from the Flood Resiliency Program. He's a program analyst at CEDACOG, talking about the fact that he certainly can help a community prepare its floodplain to make sure that it's available or, ready for all eventualities. But there are some commonalities in preparing for a flood, as there are for significant manufacturing layoffs, and there's a lot of other aspects that can make a community resilient. So, Bill, thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I do appreciate that. Under normal circumstances, when you're talking about flood resiliency, explain to our audience what that entails.
Yeah, it's kind of a twofold approach. Usually when we see a community recovering from a flood, we're talking about the recovery phase. The water comes up, people evacuate, the water goes down, and then we get into the recovery. And what we're kind of focusing on is more of the preparedness side of the resiliency. So how can we work with communities to kind of adopt sunny day measures and mentalities so that when the flood comes, the effects aren't as bad or they're able to bounce back quicker? So those kind of things that we can do when the sun is shining and the waters have not risen are kind of our focus.
And in what way can you parlay this into what we talk about, this idea of preparing for a catastrophe or things that generally relate to broad community interests, or manufacturing interests? How does that relate to helping a whole community hold up for those kind of things?
Well, one of the big issues that we face in central Pennsylvania is that most of our communities are older, and they tend to be riverine communities. They were built along rivers and streams for the navigation. So we have a large population of both residents and commercial and industrial businesses that are located in the floodplain. And as we are starting to see flooding become more prominent, the data indicates that we're seeing more frequent floods, more frequent storm, heavy precipitation events. We need to figure out what are the best ways that we can help these communities. One of the things that we see is most of our municipalities, they're already built out. We can't relocate out of the floodplain because then we are moving homeowners and businesses into adjacent municipalities and we're removing the tax base. So it's kind of working with communities to, instead of relocating, how do we come in and adopt a resilient mindset? How do we elevate utilities? How do we elevate homes? How do we floodproof structures so that they are better able to withstand the flood event? And what can they do on the back end to be better prepared prior to the flood coming?
Resilient mindset. Bill, this is Bob Garrett, President and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, and it's great to hear your voice this morning. I was wondering, Bill, could you take a few minutes and sort of walk us, if you will, from flood resiliency to community resiliency and tell us a little bit about when you do your work with communities, what are your determinants of community resiliency?
Try this one out. So what we'll do is when we talk with a lot of these municipalities, Pennsylvania is very unique in that being a commonwealth. We have a large number of municipalities, and a lot of the power resides at the municipal level. So when we come in, we want to look at, what are the communities currently doing in terms of their, floodplain ordinances, their stormwater ordinances, their building codes. A lot of communities have these ordinances on the books. Are they enforcing it? Because if you're not enforcing it, there's your first problem right there. You're just not even saying you're going to do what you're supposed to be doing. That's a big issue. A lot of it is outreach, too. We do work with several communities. They have flood task force. It's made up of local community members and some officials. And basically, that's just trying to get in and bring an awareness to the community of what the issues are, highlighting areas where maybe there are some disconnects with the communication, and trying to improve the outreach to the local folks. One of the things that we commonly see around here is everybody talks about Agnes in 72. It's kind of the flood of record, unless you live in Bloomsburg area, 2011. A lot of folks, that's kind of the new flood of record. What we're seeing, though, is that as the population is aging and folks have moved out or they're no longer with us, we're losing the idea of what happened in 72 and seeing that firsthand, and it's trying to kind of say, hey, look, this has happened and it will happen again, and how do we show people, how do they make that connection from 72 to 2019? That's the real big thing. It will happen again, and we just need to be better prepared for it.
That was interesting that you took us back memory lane a little bit there, Bill, with about Agnes and thinking about how we responded to that and how maybe we didn't have resiliency in place. And now turn the clock forward, let's think about Hurricane Sandy. Now, that wasn't as much of an issue here in the greater Susquehanna Valley as, say, it was in New York City and the state of New Jersey. But we think about Hurricane Sandy and its subsequent recovery campaign sort of seems to be imprinted in our minds. We're stronger than the storm was how they came out of that. I know that was, by and large, a tourism campaign. Come back to the beach, it's safe here, etc. But what have we learned from beginning with Agnes, coming forward with these storms, and how we can be more resilient, and how a community can be in place? And if you're able to connect it to the storm we're going through currently, with a major plant closed down, Woodmode in by name.
Sure. Yeah, I think Hurricane Sandy was kind of a wake-up call. I think, unfortunately, we've had a number of wake-up calls in recent years with some of these very large storm events. Florence last year, Houston, they're seeing record amounts of rainfall. I just read an article this morning that we just had our wettest 12-month period in 125 years, and it was the third time in consecutive months that we've had the wettest 12-month period. So, this is a very real issue, and I think one of the things that we can learn from Sandy is that disasters can happen anytime, anywhere. And one of the big things that we try to talk about with the resiliency is building this mindset, trying to take care of things before they happen, because there seems to be a heavy reliance on, if a disaster happens, FEMA and the government will come in and they'll take care of me. And although those kind of entities exist to help out in terms of disasters, they don't make you whole again. If you don't adapt this resilient mindset, you're not going to be able to recover from this kind of disaster if you haven't done other things proactive. The average FEMA payout from a disaster is anywhere between $3,000 and $7,000. So, if you lose a $100,000 house in a flood or in a hurricane, $3,000 to $7,000 is not going to make you whole again. So, as we move forward, we need to work with folks to understand that, you know, the things that you're doing now are going to help you recover, because, you know, that money's not going to be there, and even if you get some, it's not going to be enough. So I think that's an important thing to try to drive home, is to try to instill in the municipalities and in the individuals this idea that, you know, you're responsible, and there'll be people to help, but you need to really take care of it on your own.
Sure.
Thanks, Bill. You know, it's funny, as you were saying, I was doing the math here on my paper. I was here for the 72 flood 47 years ago as a 13-year-old, and it's embedded in our minds. I mean, still, so you said we're aging out. But you just mentioned a couple of pitfalls here. You know, resilience is really new, a fairly new idea. And so I think I'm curious, do you have any, obviously, the FEMA component, but is there anything else that pitfall-wise we should think about, or consider as a consumer?
Well, kind of speaking within the flood realm, one of the big things that we see, and I touched on it before, was that, you know, there's the National Flood Insurance Program, and that's the the federal program that provides flood insurance, and you know, there have been several efforts to reform that recently, and I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole because that's a whole nother show, but. You know, to be in good standing with the NFIP program, you have to adopt ordinances, to, you know, kind of show that you're going to adopt higher regulatory standards for flooding. And most communities have done that in Pennsylvania. They're on the books. But the problem is, you know, one of the issues we see is being in the municipality, or Commonwealth, with so many municipalities, every municipality is supposed to have a floodplain manager and enforce these floodplain regulations and building codes. And some do it really well. Some don't do it at all. And some kind of scratch their head when you ask, well, who's your floodplain manager? What do your ordinances say? And I think that's a difficult thing to have in Pennsylvania, because you may be in a community that is very forward-thinking and attempting to be very resilient and adopting these higher regulatory standards. However, if the community immediately upstream of you kind of thumbs their nose at their ordinances, doesn't pay much attention, you know, they build in the floodplain. When the flood comes, it picks up the propane tanks, it picks up the, you know, trailers, mobile homes, or something, and washes them down, and now it's your problem. I think that's an issue for Pennsylvania that we need to try to create a more regional approach to floodplain management. So that we can kind of get away from this just hit or miss who's enforcing and who isn't.
All right, one other question on this issue of resiliency. What else should we know about? What else should we be thinking of? Sort of a closing comment that's a little more comprehensive. You know, I guess in two words, what else, Bill?
What else? I think Pennsylvania is making strides in terms of its resiliency. You know, we have this, the governor's talked about his Restore PA. I think, you know, it's on everybody's mindset. And I think we just need to keep thinking about what can we do now to be better prepared in the future, so that when the disaster does come, and they are inevitable, unfortunately, that we have put ourselves in a better position to get through that. And I think a lot of that just comes down to being responsible for our behaviors and thinking about the effects on our neighbors, and just taking pride in our communities, but also thinking what's going to be best to promote the long-term longevity of our community health.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for all you're doing in some of the communities. I know Bloomsburg's better off for your efforts, and I'm sure other towns are around here. We appreciate you calling in. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Great talking with you.
Thank you. Bill Bradfield is a program analyst with CEDACOG. He's in their flood resiliency program, helping towns to make sure that they're ready for ready for the inevitable. It used to be sort of what if. Nowadays, it's now that, you know, just kind of getting ready. You know the flooding's going to happen. So look at all the changes they're doing in Bloomsburg. So that's a good example. And we're going to take a quick break. We have a brief opportunity here for an open phone. If you have a question for the remaining panelists here, Sue Green is here from Penn State's Executive Programs, and Bob Garrett, and she's chair of the chamber. That's green smock that she wears when she comes in, so I appreciate that. And Bob Garrett's here from the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. Our theme, resiliency, and we are talking about this idea of making sure that communities are ready for this. What's actually going to help the workers from Woodmode is sort of the subtext from our for our conversations. Joanne Troutman's going to be checking in a little bit later as well. We'll take a break. 1-800-795-9565, the telephone number. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com or text us at 70236.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. 1-800-795-9565 is our toll-free line. We do have our next guest lined up, so we're going to get to her in a moment, but I want to talk to you about something very important. It's the Sunbury Motor Company, without whom probably On the Mark wouldn't be here. They're a fabulous sponsor since the get-go. Back in, 2007, we started this show, and they've been doing a great job of sticking with us ever since, so we appreciate that. Sunbury Motor Company, a family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street Sunbury, and Routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf. They sell Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln cars and trucks. Just saw a Lincoln Mark V pickup truck yesterday that had Lawrence written all over it. And so, yeah, we're going to 6-foot bed. It was wonderful with power rear windows, sunroof. It was going in luxury, and that would definitely haul some stuff to the shore. So we're going to think about that. Oh, and it had a trailer hitch. I thought, boy, this man has it all.
Expect the call.
Yeah, right.
I want one of those.
Yeah, Kia dealership, Hyundai dealership, and Ford also at the Sunbury Motor Company on North 4th Street. Kia's over on 11 and 15. You just can't go wrong. And if you're not going to get a new vehicle, the Quick Lane is there to fix your existing vehicle, and they got online specials at sunburymotors.com to help you keep your vehicle running. Well, we are so glad to say that Joanne Troutman is back on the line. She checked in about 3 weeks ago to make sure that we were up to date with what was happening in terms of Woodmode, our theme's resiliency. She's president and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley United Way. And so tell us, what is happening with the Greater Susquehanna Valley United Way assisting in your catchment area is the Woodmode region. Many of the workers work in your area. So what is happening? Bring us up to date, Joanne.
Sure. So, we have been working sort of in tandem with Central Pennsylvania Workforce Development Corporation, MPA Career Link, in providing some staffing to help support the workers who are displaced right now. They have done an incredible job, really, with job fairs and helping people with resume help and getting signed up for benefits and that sort of thing. We kind of have been on the periphery of that, but doing whatever we could to support them. I like to say, as I told the Woodmode, a former Woodmode employees when we met a few weeks ago, that they handle the career side. We kind of work to coordinate the social side and the social support. So we and many of our partner agencies, primarily the community action agencies, have been supporting individuals as their needs arise. So that could be anything from, I have a utility bill that needs to be paid, or in some cases two utility bills, or, my rent is overdue, I need help paying for my medication or finding someone who can help me get my medication, I need to have surgery, or I was off on short-term long-term disability? What are my options if I can't get unemployment? So it's we've been taking every situation as it comes kind of individually and troubleshooting from there. And we've been able to provide help to most everybody who's called in, and the Woodmode Fund has been helpful with that.
Green, how are you? Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Quick question. Can you give us a little bit more information about the Woodmode Working Family Fund by chance?
Sure. So we've been so fortunate to partner with Sunbury Broadcasting and the Daily Item to promote that. We have, I just checked this morning, a little over $15,000 raised for the fund. We have a small advisory board pulled together, and we're actually having our first face-to-face meeting next week. The way that we're handling it is we have told our partner agencies to do whatever they can to help individuals. The fund is intended to support those and pay for those things that are over and above what we normally have money for, primarily. And our focus really has been on those basic needs, so making sure people are fed, that they, their bills are paid, that they're warm or cool, that they have shelter, those kinds of things. And we also kind of get into if there are barriers to them being able to get back to work, we handle those issues that come. So what we're going to be doing in the next couple of weeks is sending out an application to the agencies, very, very simple application for them to apply to the fund to have some of those costs paid for and reimbursed.
And so that's the fund, and is that anywhere near the need? Are you finding out that your agencies are putting out tens of thousands of dollars more than that?
So, no. you never raise enough to meet the need. That's just unfortunately the realities that we face. We definitely need more support. But we're not going to turn people away. We're doing whatever we can to help people. The challenge with this, and we have seen an uptick in requests requests for support within the last week and a half, because, if you've ever been on unemployment, you know that there is a waiting period. They now issue a debit card, so there have been some challenges with that, where people, don't get the debit card right away and therefore don't get paid right away. They have to be in compliance. So lots of steps you have to follow. It's not as easy as it seems just getting unemployment. And there's always a gap. So anybody could find themselves in that situation where, you're out of a job and you haven't gotten paid in a month. That's a problem for anyone, not to mention the fact that unemployment a lot of times may pay like 50% of what you normally get paid. So your standards of living is different, in a situation like that, especially when an unexpected thing happens. So to answer your original question, definitely we need more support. I know there's been a lot of confusion out there about, United Way didn't help me when I was off of work. We've been hearing that. I want to be clear that this is work that our agencies always do. We always support working families. It's a priority of United Way. It's just that the difference this time is the sheer volume, the sheer number of people who are out of work very suddenly all at once.
Joanne, this is Bob Garrett. It's good to hear your voice this morning. And I wanted to just sort of echo what you just said, is that that we're always here to help folks that are in need or looking for opportunities. It's what we do day in and day out. It's why we get out of bed in the morning. But I think you probably know that today's show is focusing on resiliency. And long before the Woodmode closure, you and the United Way were working on developing resiliency-focused programs for the people of our entire area. Can you tell us a little bit about those efforts and bring our listeners up to date on what all the United Way has going in the area of resiliency?
Sure. So I think resiliency takes many forms, right? You can talk about resiliency from an economic standpoint, which is, I think, first and foremost, that's kind of the place people go from a community resiliency standpoint. What are we doing to support one another? Are there other jobs out there? That sort of thing. And we do have a number of programs around financial stability, and I'm going to talk about ALICE just in a little bit, the ALICE project, which is something really exciting and new coming up. But we do have, you know, the Local Vision Project, which supports working families. It's exactly what it does, and it helps those people who can't qualify for benefits otherwise, so that we can plug the gap. But I think so much of resiliency is in the area of behavioral health. It's really easy in a situation like this to minimize, you're out of work, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and, get another job. What's so hard about that? But I think oftentimes we don't realize, first of all, how traumatic a situation like this can be. You go into work in the morning and in the afternoon you don't have a job. And that's not necessarily unique to this situation, but the fact that it happened to so many people all at once makes it really a crisis. We want to make sure that people's emotional health, their mental health, their emotional health is really being supported at a time like this. And I think, again, that's pretty easy to forget about. We do a lot of work in the area of youth mental health in particular. We do a lot of work in the area of early learning. That's about, I would say, two-thirds of the work that we do is in the area of early learning, because if you can teach people coping mechanisms and dealing with how to deal with trauma at an early age and address those early traumas in their lives, the more likely they are to bounce back and be resilient and successful later on in life. Unfortunately, in this situation, in the Woodmode situation, we've had to be, more reactive than that. But I think we need to change the conversation as a community. We really need to be thinking about how we can give children and families resiliency skills, resiliency support from before they're, babies, from before they're born, and think about all of that through the course of someone's life. We can talk about financial stability all we want. That's only part of it. We do a lot of, we've gotten into the sphere of disaster recovery. We partner with agencies like the Red Cross, who do, sort of disaster planning and disaster support, but we come in where it's a kind of midterm recovery phase, and that's another piece of resiliency. And I really consider what happened in this situation a crisis. It's sort of a different kind. It's not a flood or an earthquake or a tornado, but it is a crisis, and resiliency is such a huge part of that.
All right. Well, Joanne, do you have time? Can I place you on hold and come back to you with more questions momentarily? Would that be
absolutely
okay? All right, fabulous. So you stand by. Sue Green from Penn State's Executive Programs, we're going to have to say goodbye to you. We jammed this in. You're already busy Friday, so we appreciate you giving us this much time. An additional remark. We first talked about the jobless numbers, and then we talked about this area's ability for the people to bounce back.
I just really, from my heart, want to thank all the speakers and folks that have contributed to today and being part of the chamber to be able to, share this information and bring this type of thing to raise the awareness of what's out there and in this region, what their folks are doing, especially for the folks at Woodmode. And appreciate the opportunity of being here today, Mark. So you guys have a great rest of your day.
Well, that's a fabulous way to put it, because all of these professionals that we have on the line are top of the mind. You didn't have to rack your brain for hours to think, who are we going to bring on? That's what the chamber does, is make sure that real experts are top of the mind all the time when it comes to this stuff. Thank you so much, Sue, you check out. We appreciate you coming in and doing a super job chair in the chamber, real active chair. I know that to be true. We're going to take a quick break. Joanne Trautman is standing by. Topic resiliency, the people affected by Woodmode, the subject of our show today. And the body of our program is talking about the fact that the very definition of resilience, we're enjoying the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties and toughness. We're going to keep talking about that when we come back. Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark. You are listening on Financial Friday. You're thinking, boy, Bob's staying a long time. Did not we speak about the jobless numbers already? Yes, we did, and we talked about the 3.6% U.S. unemployment rate, the same as last month. It's also the same, the U.S. labor participation rate, and we talked what's so wrong with people not working. So we got that. But now we're continuing the conversation as it relates to individuals who worked at Woodmode, and Joanne Troutman is on the line, president and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley United Way. She just alluded to this question that we've heard a couple times, and one of our good listeners articulated it, voiced it, and tapped it into an email, and here's what it says. I feel bad for what happened there and for the people affected. All the job fairs, the support, and the help available for those workers is great. But it seems very unfair for anyone who has lost their job at another manufacturer due to downsizing. It seems to those unemployed are less important and left to pick up the pieces on their own. And they need to include, or they, meaning Woodmode, needs to include all unemployed in these efforts and not just the chosen 938. I do remember other companies closing and nothing being done for them. Joanne, you've heard this in 100 different ways. Your response, you hear that about folks are running, hey, I was laid off back in 2006. Nobody had a fund for me. So go ahead.
So, yeah, and I hear this all the time. We do. I mean, I think I want to be really clear. We do this. This is the work we do. Now, as you said before, you know, Mark, you asked the question if the money being raised is enough. It's never enough. We never have enough supports out there that are going to, you know, that's going to fully fund someone's needs. But, you know, we do focus on basic needs. There are lots of programs out there. We do have funding streams at United Way that are funded privately by private donations that anybody can donate to at any time to support people like that. And so this is the work we do every day at United Way. It's the work that the community action agencies do every day. It's the work that food pantries do every day. And it's the work that CareerLink does every day. Now, there really are no silver linings in this, but I think it does highlight this situation, really helps us highlight the importance of those things. It helps us highlight the importance of and the existence of organizations like CareerLink, like the Community Action Agencies, like the United Way. We work together every single day of the year to support people like this. I'm getting calls on my cell phone every night, every weekend, every day about people who are in need. It's what we do. You know, it's the bread and butter of what we do. And, you know, it really is a shame that more people don't know about that, that more people don't donate to causes like that. We unfortunately, a lot of times for families who are living above the poverty line but not enough to make ends meet, you know, there aren't a lot of financial supports out there, so it does fall on organizations like the United Way and our partner agencies to fund those things privately. So I can't say that enough. We do this all the time.
Well, if anybody has to be faulted in this whole process, it would be us at the radio station. You know, years ago when there were 50 layoffs at Gelled Wind or 60 layoffs at one of the home manufacturers around here, we did not say, okay, here's where you get the help. Here's, we're going to do a job fair. You know, we didn't do it, but all of those people who were looking for employers were still there elsewhere in the community. As you've mentioned, United Way was there. So, you know, I think all the agencies and individuals that are congealing around the Woodmode thing, they've always been there, as you've mentioned. If folks chose to take advantage of them, they probably proved exactly what we're talking about today, that they are resilient. 900-some people, that's a big blow. You have, you know, individuals throughout one family that'll have, you know, as many as a half a dozen people affected by this. You have husband and wives who lost their jobs at Woodmode. So you get a situation where, you know, the whole family loses all of the income that was there. So it is a little bit different. Plus 900, that's a big blow to Snyder County, you know, what, 10% of the workforce.
Right. Exactly, yep. And you know, I think I just want to add to what Joanne said. You know, the chamber just entered its 99th year And for 99 years, we've done exactly what we're doing right now. You know, a story that hasn't been told, but I think this would be a good time to tell it, is that Monday afternoon, May 13th, when Wood Mode closed, I happened at that moment, at 3:30 in the afternoon, I happened to be at the gym working out. When I came out of the gym at 4 o'clock, I had three phone calls, one from Senator John Gordner, one from then State Representative Fred Keller, and the other from Joanne Troutman, all saying, what can we do? And we rallied very, very quickly. And what we've done is we've pooled together existing resources to respond to this. In fact, the first job fair, now not this week's job fair, but the first one had been set up. That was just coincidental that it was right up the road from Wood Mode. So that was in place. Now this week's job fair did have a focus on Wood Mode, but you know, anyone who was looking for work was invited to come to that. So, you know, okay, I'm hearing what folks are saying, suggesting, hey, maybe you ought to do this for everybody. We do.
Joanne, elaborate on this if you wish to. We really talked a lot about what you do.
So I think, you know, there was one moment within the last 3 weeks that really made me pause and made me become incredibly emotional. I mean, I think we've all been very emotional about what has happened. So it's hit us at a place where we're not used to. But the moment that we went to that first rapid response meeting at Susquehanna University, I was the first speaker up and was getting ready to go up on stage. Everybody was settled into their seats and, you know, kind of talking to one another. And I looked out at the crowd and said to the gentleman from the labor and industry, I said, you know, you do this all the time. You know, this is really hard. And he said, yeah, but you know what? This is the biggest rapid response meeting ever. This is a guy from the state that he had ever been involved with. He started to say this is one of the biggest, and then stopped himself and he said, no, this is definitely the biggest. So that highlights the sheer volume and why this makes it so unique. And as you said, Mark, you know, generations, we've been going into Wood Mode for many years. We at United Way do workplace campaigns, and I would have the opportunity to speak to their management and go in, you know, one day with the radio station to highlight charitable support for the community. Wood Mode had for many years was one of our biggest United Way campaigns, and I think a lot of people, I was reading some posts on social media this morning saying how interesting it is for so many years we supported United Way and never thought that we'd ever be in that position. And that's just it. Nobody ever thinks that they're going to be in this position, and yet it could happen to anyone. And I just, there's so many moments over the last several weeks that have caused me to kind of pause and say, you know, yeah, this is a big deal.
All right, Joanne, we have a minute left with you. Define the ALICE project. You mentioned that. Elaborate on that briefly, and then we got to take another quick break here, so go right ahead.
Sure. The ALICE project stands for Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. So exactly the population that we're talking about. These are in general, people who do not qualify for many, if any, other benefits. You know, government-funded benefits out there are really working hard, you know, day to day, and often living paycheck to paycheck. And they're one crisis or one disaster away from being evicted or foreclosure. I've been in that situation in my life. And I think we're just wrapping up a statewide research project with ALICE for United Way. And we've got some data that will be released on June 18th, so I'm hoping to come back and be able to talk about that. I actually have been at a conference the last couple of days going over the ALICE data, and I think people are going to be really shocked by what they see, the sheer volume. So we often talk about people living in poverty, and locally that rate's usually somewhere between the 11% and 14%, depending on what county you live in. The ALICE population is often double or triple that. So I'll have more data to share in the next coming weeks. We'll be announcing some focus, and we're pooling all of our programs together under one umbrella that serve the at-risk population and really be talking a lot more and more specificity about that.
Well, I'll look forward to that. I'd love to hear about that. We know when CEDARCOG talks about low to moderate incomes, I'm always surprised to look at the maps they show us. And we've talked about families on the margin on this show a number of times, and those are them. So, Joanne, thank you so much. Do come back when you have that data and you have an open mic here anytime for all this outreach and education we're trying to do to make sure in the future that folks know about, think about, it's brought up, talked about, what the United Way can do for individuals. This is the outreach that people want to hear in the future, you know, when there are layoffs and so on. So we appreciate all that. Thank you for checking in today.
Thank you, and this is so important, and thanks for talking about this.
All right, Joanne Troutman, President and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley United Way. Another quick break. Come back with closing reflections from Bob Garrett of the Chamber, and I'll probably stick my 2 cents in there somewhere, too.
Please do.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. Bob Garrett, President and CEO, Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. Earlier, Sue Green was here. Jim Richmond was here from 1847 Financial. Bill Bradford from CEDARCOG. Joanne Troutman from the United Way. Additional reflections on, you heard a lot of good people talking about our ability to come back from toughness.
Yeah, reflections, what I think I heard, what the takeaways were. I think what we heard from Joanne when it comes to resiliency is that it's the capacity to bounce back quickly and to bounce back effectively, and that it takes behavior is a big part of that. Go ahead.
And it's individual-driven. It isn't agency or organization or chamber-driven. It's the people who bounce back.
And that fits perfectly with what I think I heard Bill Bradfield saying, is that the government is limited. You heard him say, if you have a $100,000 loss in a flood, the government can only help you out with about $5,000 to $7,000 of that. So there are limitations. We have to do this ourselves. You know, the criticism aside, our community has to rally to help our community, and that is critically important, because that help's not going to come from the outside. You know, everybody else is dealing with their challenges. Everybody else is dealing with their crisis. This is our crisis. We have to deal with it right here. And then with Jim Richmond, what I heard from Jim Richmond was, it's a process.
You're going to Knoebels?
Yeah. Let's talk real quickly about the what's coming up with the Chamber member celebration Friday, June 19th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. down at Knoebels Amusement Resort. I think you heard me say 1847 is a sponsor, as well as National Beef, as well as BJE Poultry, and First National Bank is our premier sponsor for that. Come on down.
What day?
June 19th, Knoebels Grove. Love to see you there.
I rarely go to Knoebels on a Wednesday evening, but I have to do what I have to do. Thank you so much. You pulled this panel together. Very much appreciated.
I was happy to do it, Mark, and thank you for correcting me. That's Wednesday, June 19th.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, your date and day didn't mess up. Yeah, thank you, Rob, for being a fabulous producer. This is News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. Okay,